Delighted you're here. Rock and roll, all things moving forward. And I know that I was in a conversation yesterday with Celinda. And so, Miss Celinda, are you there? And you had texted me you wanted to continue that conversation. So if you want to pick it up, we're ready to rock and roll.
I turned on her microphone. She's on.
Hey, young lady, welcome. Hello, hello. Well, maybe Celinda's gone silent. Are you mute challenged, Celinda?
Hello, I'm here.
There she is. Hey, young lady, welcome. So how are you this afternoon? Morning for you out there. Way out in the western part of the world.
I'm recovering from a worksheet with Dr. Tim.
Oh, nice.
So I'm not quite ready to talk at the moment.
Okay.
And
we can let it
but
go.
Hold me in your thoughts, maybe tomorrow.
Extending love in your direction, for sure.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Appreciate both of them.
And with you, just breathing away, inviting Rukka, and whatever's moving, bet it moves.
It waters sometimes, but that's okay.
For sure. One of the things to understand in the healing process is that whatever the energy looked like, felt like on the way in, when you choose to do the work to reverse it on the way out, it's going to be identical. The only thing that determines how traumatic it is the amount of resistance to letting the energy move. If I go into resistance, I can take a trauma event that I'm working on that took 2 minutes to develop, and I can still be doing it years later if I'm in resistance. And if I'm in willingness, I can take something that took 10 years to develop and bang, be through it in 2 minutes. So the willingness level, and then add the breath. The breath is my offering from a physics point of view with a physics background. Is that the way you create a superconductor state within yourself so that there is zero resistance left to the movement of energies that need to move is by the breath. And that's, of course, the still point process. So,
sweet words of encouragement. Thank you so much.
We're here holding the space. All right. Well, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody else? We'll be breathing with you. Absolutely. It is, 43 years of breathing people, there is no trauma. And I'm talking about people in the most extreme states of trauma. I mean, people in physically attacked, people facing, literal catastrophic illness. And breathe, and the breath knows how to handle it, knows how to move the energy. So keys, and of course, we can give all kinds of theories in physics as to why that works, but I think the ancient scriptures explain it best. It doesn't say that the Creator sent out His Spirit. It said the Creator sent out His breath. And the whole breath, the Holy Spirit, moves the energy, most amazingly. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet. So, go for it.
Okay. So, let's see. We were on the page 94 in the dictionary of the Enlightenment book. And we're looking, the next word we're going to look at is right about smack in the middle of the page is a plural noun, shedi. And this, we're going to refer back to page 75 in the manuscript or in the book to really get what this means because it can be misleading. So the term is allied with divani from Matthew 8:28, demons. But whereas diva is essentially elemental, shedi appears to describe a whole mind controlled by a diva. So then we need to go back and look at this word, divani. If you go to page 75, you'll find it on the left-hand side, a little, almost down two-thirds away on the page. So what we're told is that that word is a noun, and you have to be really careful with this one. The carnate, finite entity representing an evil idea. Now, you know, the Greeks took it and they turned it into all kinds of scary creatures, and we have people running around that the demons are going to get them. And yes, in the Aramaic they talk about casting out demons, but let's see what it is. Representing an evil idea created by man. And remember, the word evil is an archery term, relates to the word sin. Sin, when you fired your arrow at the target and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper would yell, sin. That would be how he would inform you, you've not gotten the bullseye. And if you missed the target altogether, then the scorekeeper would yell out, evil. So off the target altogether. So this idea is in conflict with the divine design. How could we say that simply? It goes against love. It is a disharmonious energy, an incoherent energy that does not support love staying in its integrated form. You know, when you get to the physics idea that there's only one thing in the universe, and that's energy, and that that energy is eternal, can neither be created nor destroyed, then you realize the only thing that can happen is the form of the energy can change. So we have this physiological form. It's eternal. There is absolutely no question about that. But is it eternal in this form? Are the component energetic dynamics of it eternal? Yes. Are they going to stay in this form? Well, it depends how much disintegrative energy, and you look at this, again, this definition, an evil idea created by man, an energy that's off the mark for the human system, not some evil, you know, horrific creature that's out to get us. That's more of the projection. That's more of the blame game. The devil made me do it. Satan is it. Well, again, let's go back. Satan means in Aramaic the resistor, one who misleads. It always comes back home. If you go to the Aramaic, if you go to the Greek, it always goes out there. We have this person that's a grand punisher. And what do they imagine? The creator is a grand punisher. So when I take responsibility, then I recognize that if I hold disintegrative energy, then I'm going to experience in my physiology. If I hold an energy that's incoherent, let's say, for the structure of my liver, then I'm going to have liver disease. And it will be caused by a demon. What is this? A carnate, that is something in your physiology, finite entity representing an evil idea created by man, which is in conflict with the active presence of love, we could say, as opposed to divine design. The evil entity represented by Divan, apparently capable of fixing or setting in a mind so firmly as to control whole or part its attitudes, words, behavior, and judgment. I remember back, I was living in Atlanta. This was before my son was born. He's 43. That's 44 years ago, probably. I'd started teaching, and there was a group of women who had a club of some kind, and they invited me to come and speak. So I did. And after I did my presentation, I said thank you, and kind of hung around for a little while, and there were a lot of kind of like snarky, gossipy kinds of conversations going on. It's like, enough, I don't really need to do this. So I said my goodbyes and left. A short time later, I don't really remember now how long it was, but a short time later, I get contact from one of these people. I'd gotten home, and my phone rings, and I say, oh, you've got to come back. You need to help us. There's something wrong. Something's got a hold of one of the women. Okay, so I went back, and the two women who've been having this kind of nasty, gossipy conversation were sort of, it's almost like they were joined at the hip in the conversation, the nastiness of it, and one of them was choking. And they had created such an energy field between them of negativity that it was like someone or something had her physically by the throat. Now, I had no idea what to do with that. But I went into the room, and I mean, this woman's being choked. And my inclination was just to go into a really clear, connected space and deny that this thing had any power. And instantly, the grip was loosened. He had created an energy, and it fits perfectly with this incarnate, that our energy became functional in her physiology, and she was choking over it. And so someone who's possessed by a demon, what is it? What happens? An evil, an energy that's off the mark, idea created by man in conflict with love that settles into a mind so firmly as to control in whole or part its attitudes, words, behavior, and judgment. And my offering is that it's time for each human being on earth to start to be willing or to step into ever-increasing levels of willingness to embrace any form of mind energy that is out of harmony with love, that is resonant within themselves, that is incoherent relative to the tissue structure, therefore destructive to it, to embrace that energy in love and remove it from the structure. It's time for us to start to move in that direction. So that gives us a clearer idea of what this idea of Satan is. And you remember that when this work was done back in the 70s, it was 25 of the world's top Aramaists that worked on the project of developing this dictionary. And the major focal point was to establish as closely as possible the first century meaning of the words of the text. So we're talking here about an elemental force that when we assemble that energy can impact literally everything in the human realm. Time for us to wake up. Shlama. Name, output, anything produced by a person. The doctrines of a teacher, the teachings, two teachings, truth. And so this idea of the product of one's life would be referred to as shlama. And so we see different references through John and Matthew, his teachings, through me, truth. Shmaya, dishmaya, speaks of, in the Greek language, heaven, sky, but in Aramaic, there's no implication of sky, but that's the metaphor that it's used for. And more properly, if we talk about dishmaya, the kingdom of heaven, we'd be talking about the community of love. Shultana, authority, executive authority. And Shaka, the lamp, light. You are the light of the world. Yeshua, it's interesting, in Aramaic, the exact same words were used except for the pronoun. He spoke of himself as the light of the world, and then he pointed to those around him. You are the light of the world. Should you choose to give up everything of that elemental force that is of a disintegrative nature, then there's nothing in you that can inhibit the light. Remember, he talked about, you know, who lights a candle and puts it under a bushel basket? Yet a lot of people, their light is hidden by the hostilities and fears of the non-being mind. Time to open up. Shraura is truth, and it goes through a variety with suffixes and prefixes of, through John, of a complete truth, absolute truth, your truth. Sibiana, will. So this would be a word that describes the faculty of the human nafsha, the human created being. The executive authority of the mind with which one controls attitudes, goals, and cue controls. And to develop will, a spiritual faculty, you know, if you go into our workshop, Getting the Stress You Need, we talk about will as the way that the mind is controlled. And the mind is controlled indirectly through goals. And since rarely have people been taught, at least as far as I'm aware, to cancel their goals, the only way that a goal can be removed from mind is by either achieving it or canceling it. And so most people have, who knows, thousands, perhaps millions of goals in their minds. Circumstances resonate and activate those goals, and people go for it. And when people function out of goals held in carbon-based memory from the past, then they're being run by the past. And there's no room for will in that. And of course, you know, the non-being mind, the ego mind, has a cheap copy of everything real in the spiritual dimension. And the cheap copy is willpower. I'm going to force this. I'm going to make this happen. But will is not about forcing or making things happen. It's about taking charge of one's own mind through that faculty and directing the mind in its activity. So there's several things that will can do. We go over this in the Getting the Stress You Need workshop. Will can frame a goal. Will can set a goal. Will can cancel a goal. Will can select the goal for immediate attention. Will can maintain a goal. Unless the mind that is being directed by that will is broken. There are several things that can damage that mind. You know, it's really crazy. You know, some of the biggest opponents of pot in the political system are now the people that are profiting from the sale of pot. They've got huge corporations going and they're making millions upon millions. And one of the things that pot does is it destroys the part of the brain that will uses to maintain a goal. You know, think about your pothead. What are they? You give them a list of five things and say, would you get these five done? And they get halfway to getting the first, to where the first one is located to be done. And they don't remember what that was, and they don't remember the other five either. You know, it's like there was a professor that did some research on pot, and what they came up with in the laboratory was that there were two major effects of pot. One was that it destroyed memory, and the second one, he couldn't remember. He forgot. Excuse me, I couldn't resist that. But I think it's really tragic now. You know? Pot's out there, and everybody's like, oh, well, it's a soft drug. It never hurt anybody. Oh, you better look at the research. The brain damage that's done by pot is horrendous. And the major reason is because the THC molecule just happens to be the right shape to fit into the cell membranes where nutrients enter the cell and wastes exit the cell. And that THC molecule, and I don't know whose numbers are accurate, but somewhere between 8 days and 8 months, that THC molecule is locked into that cell. Now, it has an impact throughout the whole structure, but in particular in the brain cell, this is destructive because it's blocking nutrition getting into the cell and it's locking wastes into the cell. So you listen to the pothead and what's the conversation go like? Well, you know, it's really, you know, it's really just pretty cool. And, yeah, I was going to say something, but let me think now. Anyway, it's cool. Doesn't really matter. And, you know, kids especially are being taught, oh, well, you know, this is just a happy thing to do. Now, have a mind that functions on full nutrition and full activity, and you're going to have a mind that's capable of happiness. Otherwise, a mind that is anesthetized and drugged thinks it's happy. But anesthetizing against pain is not happiness. Relative to being, you know, totally inundated and feeling every bit of pain in your structure, hey, it's pretty cool. I'm not saying there aren't medical uses for it, you know. People who have cancer have trouble eating. Hey, smoke all the pot you need to. If your cancer's going to kill you in a year, you know, eat and enjoy it. But feeding it to young kids, undeveloped brains, it's a tragedy. More and more and more states are going, yay, hey, this is another revenue source. Something to think about. Goals become a big key. And so the next several variations with suffixes and prefixes speak of will and the control and the function of will. Snay. Nasty sounding word. And it really comes down to hate or viciousness, usually in the human realm. It may also appear as a mind structure underlying the attitudes and behavior we describe as destructive. Hatred is usually of human beings. So sne uta, we add that suffix we talked about earlier, and someone's being controlled from the unconscious part of their minds by this vicious, hateful part or set of brain cells. Ta is a suffix that you add, and it indicates a neural structure in the mind, a literal, we could call an entity of the mind, being lifted in function from silent or unconscious, latent, to where it's active. And you'll see the note, again, on page 95, a little better than halfway down the page, appears as E-Y-A in Tuvehun. You look at that word Tuvehun, and if you remember when we talked about the Beatitudes, it's a three-part word, tuv, a, hun. And so what that word speaks of is a latent neural structure. That's the EY part. Tuv is an attitude of mind or a neural structure. So a neural structure that's implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being, a neural structure that is unconscious or unavailable, it's latent. And then you go into the Beatitudes, and the Beatitudes tell you how to activate it. Find me that in neuropsychology or neuropsychiatry somewhere today. Not going to find it. But it was known 2,000 years ago. Talan is to let, to allow. And if we move on down, tashlim, to fulfill, tavata, heavenly words, acts or deeds, as indicated by subject. So when one has a mind that's guided by active present love, then this would be an idea that applies. And the result of that, in Matthew 12:34-35, it speaks of heavenly words, of the expression of words that are based in love. And if we head over to page 96, top of the page, Tagore committed adultery. Well, the number of lawful wives was unrestricted in Galilee at the time of Yeshua. Intercourse outside of wedlock, for male or female, was called Tagore. It was a breaking of the law. So, adultery. The prefix T-I or T-I-T spoke of or indicated that it implied a second person. So we're talking to or of someone else. And we go down to Rachma again. We see Rachma with this second person imperative. And so it appears that this energy, when it is moving within a human being, when this gateway called Rachma and Kuba are open, that that energy reaches out, that energy expresses in being available to or touching another. And we go on down through the list, and it all refers back to things we've pretty much already talked about. Let's head over to page 97 in the dictionary. Two, here's that neural structure, an attitude of mind. So a two, and what we're looking to understand is, a la Aramaic, is that the mind presents these perceptual constructs. And you remember way back when we talked about the light in the mind, and that your active two, the active neural structure in you, is supposed to be a light in the world, a light for your earthly life. So each tuv, each neural structure that you have that's available to become active, you want to make sure, pardon me, that it's based in active present love. And when based in active present love, then your path through life is lighted. And then you'll remember, this, we spent quite a bit of time on this back in the beginning of the study. You remember we talked about perception, the constructs from carbon-based memory are designed to be the light for your earthly life. They're designed to give you information relative to yourself and your goals, that information which would carry your life forward into the actual world as it is. And if hostility or fear is active, then rather than a light for your earthly life, it becomes darkness. You know, that seems like a conflicting idea. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? Well, how can light become darkness? But in that particular passage, they're saying, if the guide for you, so perception based in love is the light for your earthly life, the guide for your earthly life. It keeps your mind on track. If the light, the guide you follow, is darkness, that is any form of hostility or fear, then how deep will your darkness become? Everything to do produced by the human mind that is based in hostility or fear is darkness. And it will always lead you to a sorrowful place. And so if you have the privilege of interacting with someone and they resonate your hidden darkness, remember being asked by a woman who considered herself to be very religious. She was a professional, actually, quite a successful professional. And she saw herself as being quite religious and pious. And so she asked me, you know, she's like, I don't know what's going on. Why sometimes do I just go into these fits of rage? I don't know. I don't understand. I have Jesus and I'm, you know, I'm religious. I go to church all the time. Why do I have this? And so I explained, it's because They're the energetic patterns within her mind. They are tubes. They are constructs in their mind that need to be cleaned out. And she was just like, no, that can't be. That can't be true of me because I have Jesus and, you know, I got my life together. It's like, well, okay. So you think that your mind goes into a rage because of something outside of you. Well, that's just pure, you know, straight up denial. And the problem with going into denial is that one who lives there, no, this isn't about me. Let me explain to you how it's about somebody else. Well, that's being trapped in Satan. Remember Satan, the resistor, one who misleads, you think, in the mind of man, rather than connected to the actuality? Until I can own that this is mine because it's moving in me, and what's moving in me is moving in me because it's in me. If I can't own that, I can never undo it because I'll have to keep it hidden from myself. So it becomes a real key there. So this idea of tube is a neural structure within the mind that is of heavenly dignity and function, connected to love. A neural structure decided by the Creator for all human minds, and one which makes available thoughts and actions in conformity of the will of the Creator called love. And when it's active, it will increase, it will guide you to behaviors and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. So again, and we've repeated this to Vehun many times, God implanted in your mind neural structures which will guide you when they are active. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent guidance system designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. And then there's several different forms of that word, tuv. Gives you a broader sense of what that idea is. It's the heavenly, what people refer to as heavenly, those things connected to love, a heavenly attitude, an upliftment, better, a sense of right, good, tebuta, judgment or action. So actually, when one is open to this neural structure based in love being active, then the resultant condition is that of a higher state of function and a higher ability to process those things that have been hidden within that are based in hostility or fear. That's interesting. I'm not sure why I'm just seeing that Tuvehun is in this dictionary twice. Defined. I'll have to change, edit that. And so if we move on down the list, we're heading toward the bottom of page 97. Yadi is to know, to comprehend, to understand. And several variations on that. It's interesting, this word venvedi. Take the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8th word up. I don't proclaim to have anything that resembles great Aramaic diction, to say. But it's prophets. And when they speak of the law, when Yeshua speaks of that, he speaks as though the prophets are a possession of or an expression of the law. When they say, ask Yeshua what's most important in the law, in the way things work as human beings, what's most important? You keep Rachma active so love is present in you. And then he says, for upon this hangs the law, that condition of Rachma active in the mind and its prophets. In other words, if you have that condition active in you, then you will step into the arena of what were called the prophets. And that doesn't mean people who sit around seeing the future. It's those who are able to attune to and connect to and have a comprehension of the actuality of how the energy field is working, what's actually going on in it. Yod, the smallest letter in the alphabet, that's one of those that, you know, they said no, not one jot or tittle will be changed. They're the smallest letters. Yopani, recital, learning, the delivery of wisdom, being able to speak from that connected space of active love. And then over to page 98, last page of the dictionary, Zadik. So the key in this one is that we've got a neural structure, we've got an entity of mind that's active that is in integrity. This would be a source from the Beatitude we talked about, just and fair behavior. This would be where it would be connected. So in the text, it's rendered as holy or righteous, which of course includes integrity, but it's not the kind of piety, pious sort of righteousness. It's actually being connected to the energy system and knowing what's in harmony with right action, and then having the neural structures to support you in doing it. One who is engaged, kudsha, remember Ruka de kudsha, that which is proper for humans, engage in the energies proper for humans. So it's a whole, refers to a whole group of neurostructures, those things in the mind that support the attitudes and behaviors which people would call holy and righteous. Not pious, but actually coming from and expressing in a way that supports the whole of life. And then the next few through Matthew gives you different variations on the theme of that word. Darnoita, wantonness in women, harlotry. And again, a couple of examples of that. And Zirta, the dash or scratch of a pen. I'm actually not even sure where that one applies, but that kind of covers our dictionary. And you know, when we start out with the text, it just seemed to that to go through the dictionary and do some of the basic thoughts would be useful to do the rest of the text. So let's see who's on the call. See who's calling in.
I believe it's Rome. 903, you're on the air.
Hey,
greetings.
Welcome.
How are you all?
We're rocking. Doing well. Doing well.
Awesome. I calling in today. Well, I have a couple things I'd like to get your idea about regarding this process. Now, I will say I have yet to do one worksheet, print one out, and I haven't done it yet. I've really just been taking things in and trying to be mindful of the things that I'm hearing. I guess taking this in. And I was wondering in regards to some things that I've kind of noticed about myself. I see some barriers. I mean, it's obviously, I don't see it as, you know, impossible by any means, but I see some challenges that I feel are, you know, come from somewhere. And the first of the two that I wanted to bring up is I think I have a tendency to be on the perfectionism side of things, which is kind of ironic because I don't really see anything that looks all that perfect in my life. But that also could be, you know, just perception. What are your thoughts?
Did you have a power person?
Oh, absolutely.
Did you have a power person that required perfection from you? Was always wanting.
Yeah, never good enough. Yeah, so I mean, I
recognize
that.
How did you like
that
when that was played out with you?
Well, you know, it started when I was young, as it probably did with a lot of people. And I would imagine I didn't like it too much, but the thing is, when you're young, you don't know any different. So I feel that that's kind of played into life for me. And as I'm seeing it, the way I even look at not everyone, but just, I don't know, the closest people to me, you know,
right.
Like, I guess you'd say my goals or plans for them. And I just look at things as like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. I feel like I might be a little hardcore when it comes to things. And it's just, you know, I don't know. I think that's what it is, a sense of perfectionism or always striving. Not doing anything,
well,
because you don't feel that you can do it right.
You know, it might be valuable to look into the codependence workshop that we do. And in codependence, we describe what we call a power person. And that in order for someone to be a power person in our lives, and pardon me, there's a tendency for us to have more than one power person. Three things have to occur, and it usually happens between a parent and a child, and that's what establishes that power person dynamic. And that is that the power person has more power over the child than, of course, the child does. The power person is not functioning out of love. And the child perceives the situation as survival. When those three things occur, the energy field of the child opens wide, and whatever energetic dynamics are happening in the field, even things that aren't spoken, even if it's just emotional or thoughts, those energetic patterns are absorbed by the child. In the future, that person who's had the power person dynamic instilled in their minds will literally only have three behaviors available to them, three options for behaving, and they'll all relate back to the power person. The behavior that the mind will automatically select for that individual that has a power person dynamic in their minds will be determined by the level of stress they're under. When there's little or no stress, a person will tend to do, just the automatic decision system kicks in, and they'll tend to do whatever their power person, pardon me, whatever they did to get along with their power person. When stress starts to build, they'll flip out of that behavior, and they'll go into doing whatever they did to resist and survive with their power person. And then, when they become ultra-stressed, they'll tend to do what their power person did to them that they hated the most. So my offering is, the sense I get and what I'm hearing you say is, that your power person isn't around to do it to you, so you're doing it to yourself. And that would be, my offering would be, that would be the place to start to do your forgiveness work. Especially hearing that you have that little voice in the background, because if you don't resolve your power person dynamics, then you will end up being the power person for that little one. One who, as a parent, is able to continuously maintain the state of active love, never has to impose that power person dynamic upon their child. But when stress builds, most people start defaulting back to the power person dynamic unless they've gone back in and done the forgiveness work of removing it. And that's where I'd suggest the worksheet comes in. And, you know, even easier perhaps than printing them and doing them, if you go to your app store on your phone and you just type in Heartland as one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, in your app store, that will bring up the Heartland Forgiveness app. There's a red glowing heart. There are a few apps that will come up when you type that in. And there's a red glowing heart. And you can do the worksheet process right there on the app. And so, you know, you carry it within your phone wherever you are. You got a minute, you can head down and do a worksheet. So there might be another option other than printing it and writing it. But I'd suggest digging in. I
downloaded the app. I just have yet to do it. You know, I'm thinking, well, I wanted the first one to be on the paper. Got like a nice fancy piece of paper just to like, you know, be a token of like me starting to really do some deep diving and work in my life.
All right.
But, you know, I was thinking, like, why haven't I done this yet? And I'm like, well, maybe it's because I'm waiting for everything to be just right, which it never will
So
be.
here's my input. Here's my input. One of the things is that sometimes people will sit down and take 2 hours to do a worksheet. So if you're thinking, I need this whole bundle of time, one of the practices we've recommended, and we've done this because we've had it shared with us, that you can do a worksheet, give yourself about 3 minutes, and just go through the steps of the worksheet and start to develop the brain cells and the habit of utilizing that tool. And then, yes, if you go into deeper dynamics, it might take a little longer, but it doesn't have to be a big, long ordeal. And one of the things that I've observed over the years is that, or at least, pardon me, I should say the conclusions that I've come to, is that the reason people don't do it is because there's a part of them that knows that they're going to have to start to face some things that they haven't wanted to face. And I just encourage you to go for it, stand in willingness, and know that whatever needs to come up will come up, and you can work through it.
Okay. Before I bring up the second thing, could you go back to point two of, you said there's typically three modes that a
right.
person with a power
mm-hmm.
dynamic person
right.
has? I didn't quite grasp the second of the three.
Okay. So the power person has more power over the child. Again, it's usually a parent and child, not necessarily. Has more power over the child than the child has. The second thing is they're not functioning out of love. They're functioning out of some form of hostility or fear.
Okay.
And then the third thing, the child perceives that, oh, my God, you know, this is, if I don't eat, if I don't keep this person happy, you know, whatever the dynamics are. So when those three things happen, when you think of this body-mind unit as an energy field, that's when the child's field just opens wide, and they become like a sponge. Any energy that's in the field is just drawn into the structure and becomes part of this power person dynamic. And my take is, if you look around the world, if you were to be able to talk to, I don't care whether it's the president of the United States or it's a congressperson or, you know, a bum on the street, what's running their lives is this power person dynamic. Literally,
I'm sorry
runs
to interrupt
the world.
You.
That's okay.
What I was referring to is the modes that we operate out of. One you're saying, like, when everything's fine, you just kind of, like, do what you just do. Second, I
right.
don't quite
get along with that.
Wrap my mind. And the third is, like, you know, you become the power person.
Right. So the second one is, let's use an example. So let's say that I'm Mr. An example I usually use. I'm Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy. So I get along with my power person, you know, everything is rocking, and everybody thinks I'm really wonderful and nice and sweet, and I am. And then when stress starts to build, there'll be a personality shift. This is sometimes referred to as multiple personality. And not only does a personality shift, but there are actual measurable chemical changes in the body, physiology shifts, along with this mind energy shift that occurs. And so this often happens in relationships. Two people have been together for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and, you know, things are wonderful. And one day, now that, you know, there are two babies and their bills due and blah, 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 the stress is building, all of a sudden, you know, these two people have been interacting for, let's say, 5 years together, and it's always been Mr. Nice Guy. And now the stress hits, and what happened with the power person under extreme levels of stress was that one became, in order to protect themselves, became Mr. Snarky. So all of a sudden there's a personality shift, and it's like, who are you? I've never seen you before. And it might be years before that pops its head up, before there's enough stress for that behavior to come forward.
Okay.
And then if one becomes ultra-stressed, and maybe, you know, what the power person did that I hated the most was use their fists on me. So all of a sudden, Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy becomes Mr. or Ms. Snarky, and all of a sudden they're slapping people around when they get to that ultra-stressed state.
Okay. I understand. Thank you for explaining that. And the last thing, so I can, I guess, knock this out and let you get back and close. I feel that I have a relatively low emotional intelligence, and this is a concern for me when it comes to doing the worksheets and doing other things. I think now I'm at a state to where I'm more aware than I've ever been of emotions,
right.
But I think I'll probably struggle a little bit when it comes to, like, identifying things, because I honestly don't think, I think, I feel that for whatever reason, self-preservation, whatever, it's just like there's been a lot of things suppressed to where it's like things are there, but I don't even think I can put, like, it's disassociated in the sense that there's a feeling that I don't
identify
know what to call this. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how that's going to play out when it comes time to, you know, having to identify these things. Oh, what are you feeling? I don't know. Like, I've always hated, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel? You know, it's like, I don't know. I think I'm, like, really underselling myself right now, but I'm just used to coping. So how do you think that'll, or what do I need to look at when doing these worksheets and trying to get the most out of them? And that's my last question.
Right. So I'm not sure I quite understood the question, but just let me throw another thought in before I ask for clarity on it. So in interaction with your power person, did they ever give you messages about what your capabilities were?
I'm sure they did. Yes.
Usually the early messages from a power person are things like, you're broken. There's something wrong with you. There's something deficient about you. And so if they're messages that you've received, then I'd suggest maybe some of your early worksheets might be on your power person around that dynamic so that you can uncover and let go of that thought that somehow you're deficient, because the truth is each one of us is a genius in our being. And it's the mind that interferes with that. And as you start to let that go, the interference of the mind gets out of the way, and all of a sudden, your true genius shows up. And everybody has that.
Maybe I could word it this way, and I'm sure, like, what you said still applies. Try to make it more simple. I don't know that I can identify, like, some feelings. And, like, sadness, per se. Like, I've come to realize that recently I've been depressed a lot throughout the years, but didn't even know that it was depression.
Right.
Like, I mean, I came from a family that's like, oh, you know, like, I mean, we didn't really acknowledge a whole lot, like, of emotion. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of, like, there was love there, but it was not warm, tender love. It was hard, you know, so...
Yeah.
What
right.
I'm getting at is I'm not so in touch with my inner self, and I'm not sure what that will look like when it comes to doing the worksheets and, you know, writing down the emotions when I don't even know what I'm feeling a lot of times. You know, I just do.
And you know, when you do that worksheet, it's perfectly fine to just put a question mark in around the emotions if you're not sure what it is.
Okay.
You know, in order for the forgiveness process to be effective, you don't have to do every step of the process perfectly.
Okay.
We've actually got a short form 3-step process. I identify the situation. I look at what my, or actually 4-step. Identify the situation. I look at the goal that I'm holding here. I cancel the goal and I ask Rooker for support. It can be as short as that.
Okay.
And that can move a ton of energy. So you don't, you know, I'd let go of, and maybe it's time to just become a retired perfectionist. And you don't have to do every step perfectly in order for the forgiveness process to be extremely effective.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah. Cool. Sweet. Well, delight to hear that little voice in the background. And thank holding you. The space for your first worksheet.
Yes.
Hi, Rome.
Thank you all so much. You all have a wonderful day.
All right, and as questions come up, please feel comfortable. Shout and ask. We're here to support
you.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. Okay, take care. Have the best year yet of your eternal life.